And welcome to Monsters Among Us. I'm your guide, Derek Hayes. Tonight's show is jam-packed full of paranormal encounters, so I won't waste anybody's time. We're gonna jump right into this. But before we do get started, I want to touch on Katie's call from the previous episode. If you recall, Katie witnessed a four-legged, cat-like creature with the ears of a rabbit that seemed to chase her from a known haunted location. Well, after last week's show aired, I got an email from listener Sam. The email goes as follows. Hi, Derek. Not reporting a sighting, but something struck me listening to the Creature in the Bushes segment in this week's episode. It sounded incredibly similar to something that was sighted in the next town over from my hometown. It was the mention of the long ears. Something called the Beast of Green Drive or the Beast of Lytham was spotted around 20 times in 2005. It was seen a few more times until 2007 when it was finally captured and put down by the RSPCA, as it turned out to be a very elderly fox with mange. Though not as aggressive as the creature your caller saw, the description sounds rather familiar. Thank you, Sam. Sam was kind enough to include a couple links to local news stories about the events surrounding the Beast of Green Drive. You can find a link to those articles, in addition to a sketch of the creature, in the show notes for tonight's episode. Thank you, Sam, for making the connection and sharing it with all of us. And now, let's get on with the show. Anyone that's rented or purchased a new home knows this feeling. It's your first couple nights. The majority of the unpacking is complete. You've decorated and hung pictures of your family, and possibly even met the new neighbors next door. But it's those first few evenings that really rub your nerves raw. What was that strange creaking sound? Is that shadow on the wall a coat rack or a killer? Who lived and possibly died in the very room where I'm resting my head? These were the very thoughts that went through the head of repeat offender Gavin when he moved to his new Georgia home. The following is his experience.
Hey, it's Gavin again. So in my last one, we were living in Indiana. I lived there until my freshman year of high school, and then we moved down in the beginning of my sophomore year to Georgia. When we moved to Georgia, we got a new house, and because before we lived in it, the previous story happened just like a regular townhouse, but this is actually a house that had been here a little while. It was a bit of an older house that had, it was a rented house, so it's had a bunch of people move in and out, and I was probably about 16 or 17 at the time at the most, and I had a brother and a little sister, and my mom and dad all live in this house. From the moment I moved in, this house really scared me. If I was alone, I did not leave my room, or I was just not at the house. If everybody left and I knew everybody was going to be gone, I did not like being in there. I just got the weirdest feeling. No one had said anything to me yet before this, but I just had I just had the weirdest stuff. And when I was trying to go to sleep, if my brother wasn't in the room or something like that, all I could do is I felt like I was like being watched. I was like at the door of our room. I just stared at the door just the whole night until I fell asleep. It was the weirdest feeling. I didn't have too many experiences other than just like very bad feelings. Like I would, my parents left out of town like after I'd moved out a few years later, which was a big relief when I finally moved out of this house. But they went down to Louisiana to visit family, and I house sat for them. And by house sat, I mean I went into there, and then I fed the cat and then left. I tried staying in there one night, and man, I felt like the whole house was watching me. But other than that kind of stuff, just like the weirdest presence, I didn't have too many experiences. My family all did. My mom had probably 3 or 4, and I trust her. And I trust everybody in my family because they all experience stuff. But my mom was probably the most, she had the most stuff. She's always home. She didn't have a job. She basically worked from home if she did at the time. And so the first one my mom experienced was she was in the the bathtub and nobody else was home at the time. And she left the door open and she was taking a bath and she was looking at towards the door. And it was all black outside because all the lights were off. And this white figure just comes floating across, and she had no idea who it was. And she started yelling for my little sister if she was home or see if it was the cat or something like that. But it was tall. It was like a human size crossing the door. And she went and looked around the house. Nobody was there. That was her first one. And then my grandparents came visiting a little while later. And they were all in the living room just talking. And then they hear somebody like sprint through the home. Like the home is only like it's a 3-bedroom home. It's probably about like 1400 square foot on the bottom. Like it's not huge, but it's a pretty decent sized home. But you could hear somebody run across the entire house like do 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 do. Then there was nothing, and they all went searching around the house. There was nothing. They have cats, but they the cats do this kind of aren't that active, and they don't sound like a human being like with huge boots. That was the second one. And then also in the same time, they had when my grandparents were still visiting, everybody was in the room, including all the animals, and they heard a big crash in the kitchen, and a large plate had come across from the shelf in the kitchen. Had flown across the kitchen into the middle and broke in the middle along with a spice bottle. So that happened, and that was really weird because it's not like they were just piled up in the sink or something like that. These were nicely stacked on a shelf. If somebody was to like take these and throw them, they'd have to reach up and then they'd have to pick them up because they're pretty heavy and throw them all the way across the kitchen, which was about 5 or 6 feet. So that was also a really strange one. And I think the last big experience she had, because there was a ton of small ones at all times, like there was like sounds, like we had a piano and we could hear that going off randomly, just small little noises from it. We could hear bangs and stuff. But the last big one was my mom was alone in the house and she was going in and out doing some gardening on the porch. And she took the dog out with her and she closed the door behind her kind of fast. And then about 5 seconds later, like after she had closed the door, she turned around and was reaching for something. And it sounded like somebody from inside the house just banged on the door with their fist, like as hard as they could. And my mom obviously was freaked out from this. And she went inside trying to look what it was and nobody was there. There's nothing hanging on the door. So that was her last big one. And like I said, there were small ones and I never had a big experience at that house, but I was always constantly freaked out every time I was there, and I just had this uncomfortable feeling. My mom herself has a very positive outlook on this kind of stuff, and she said she always felt the same, but she never felt a bad presence there. But that house was definitely haunted. I did not like it. The day I moved out, I felt this pressure off my shoulders, like, thank God we're gone. But anyway, that's my last ghost story. I have probably one more I'll call back with. Thanks a lot for listening.
Thank you again, Gavin, for your continued support and for sharing yet another tale. The first thing that came to mind when reviewing Gavin's call was an invisible force known to most paranormal investigators. Of course, I'm speaking of EMF, electromagnetic fields. Anyone that's ever seen ghost hunters or the like have heard of EMFs. An EMF is a measurable field of electricity that's produced by various electronic equipment and even living creatures. Depending on the strength of the waves being emitted, various negative effects can be experienced, some even life-threatening. It's a popular belief among paranormal investigators that these EMFs cause your body to react in ways that are reminiscent of paranormal activity. According to the World Health Organization, symptoms include headaches, anxiety, suicide, depression, nausea, and fatigue. Now, many paranormal investigators will also include the feeling of being watched, out-of-body experiences, and even full-on hallucinations in that list of symptoms. So in short, it seems possible that Gavin's new home could have had higher than normal levels of electromagnetic fields, which could cause him to feel creeped out in the home. Of course, like anything we know little about, these quote-unquote symptoms are highly debated in the paranormal field, so that leaves us with his actual experience, which seems to suggest that something strange may have been going on in his home. Thank you again, Gavin, for sharing yet another story. In keeping with the ghostly theme, our next call also explores supernatural happenings within the home. This is EH's call.
Hi, my name's EH. I'm calling from California. And my parents' house is kind of in the middle of nowhere. If you're from California, you might know where Chico is. It's about 40 miles south of Chico, and there's basically nothing but walnut orchards around. So I lived in that house for probably close to 10 years, and I still visit sometimes. A lot of weird stuff would happen, but not usually anything big, usually just noises, things calling my name when nobody's home, weird stuff like that. So, for a while, nothing happened, and then I started waking up almost every single night at either 3 or 3:30 a.m. every night without fail for probably a good 2 week period. And it would come and go for a couple of weeks, and then it would stop, and then it would come back, and then it would stop, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. So then one night, something else woke me up about 3 o'clock in the morning, and it was specifically the sound of my father's footsteps. He used to be a police officer, and I know what his footsteps sound like coming home from the graveyard shift at 3 o'clock in the morning, but he's been retired for over a decade now. So I hear his footsteps on the wood floor, and they walk from the kitchen to my bedroom door, and then they stop. And then I hear the water running in the sink in the kitchen. Now, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I can't imagine what he'd be doing up or why he would be by my room. So I'm actually starting to freak out because I think now that there might actually be somebody else in the house. So it's at this point that I quietly creep to their bedroom and I wake him up and we search the house and there's nobody here. And the water, the faucet in the sink actually never even ran. The sink is bone dry. So this actually repeats multiple nights over about a month, probably 2 or 3 more times. Then one night I wake up 3 o'clock in the morning and I decide to go to the bathroom. Well, on my way to the bathroom, I look towards the kitchen and I see a pitch black silhouette of my dad in the kitchen, just sort of leaning over, like bracing himself on the island and not moving. And so I think, well, I'll just ask him what's wrong when I get out of the bathroom if he's still there. So when I get out of the bathroom, I see that he's still there. And I start to walk towards him to see what's wrong and ask him what's going on. And I get about halfway there, I blink, and he's pretty much gone. Like, his silhouette sort of dissolves. And I see like a few specks of black in my vision, and then when I blink again, he's completely gone. And I had no idea what to make of it, so I went back to bed, and when I asked him the next morning, he said he never woke up at all that night anyway. So yeah, that's my story. I don't really have any more details.
Thank you, EH, for taking the time to submit your story. As it turns out, EH is currently writing a book on the phenomenon known as the Shadow Man, or Shadow People. And as part of her writing process, she's searching out Shadow Man encounters that she would later detail in her final work. So if you have a Shadow Man experience, even one you've told on the show previously, and would like to share your account with EH, you can send her an email at e.h.smith, which is S-M-Y-T-H-E, .shadowinthedark@gmail.com, or head on over to the show notes for a direct link. As for her actual encounter, there seems to be a phenomenon going on here that's reminiscent to the living ghost phenomenon, which is basically, as it sounds, the ghost of a living person. These reports are much less common than your typical ghost sighting, but have been known to happen from time to time. I will try to touch on this subject in greater detail in a later episode, but for now, thank you, EH, for submitting your story. I really look forward to reading your book. Our next call takes us out of the realm of ghosts and into the bizarre world of strange coincidence. This is Danny's call from California.
Hi, Derek. This is Danny. I've loved the show. Been listening to it for, I guess, the last few weeks, kind of just binging it. It's a great platform to kind of allow people to share their stories and kind of gather great information about, these strange occurrences in the world. My story happened in 2009. It was late spring, this is May. At the time, I was in a band, and we were actually recording what would become our debut full length, and this is in Los Angeles. Anyway, we had just finished it, a recording, and we went to start doing the cover art for the album, and all of us had been kind of spitballing different ideas about what the cover should be. The title of the record was Read My Palm, Revenant, which obviously, for anyone that doesn't know, a revenant is sort of like a zombie, a vengeful spirit. And we thought, okay, like, what should we do with this? So long story short, after some discussion in the band, we decided to do something with, sounds stupid now, a Ouija board, which at the time I had no experience with it. Obviously, I knew what it was. I'm a huge horror fan. I've been growing up on ghost stories for my entire life. But didn't really put any stock in it, I guess, necessarily. So as a band, we kind of decided that, even though there was two of us, not myself, but two other bandmates, who were very standoffish about the whole thing. They didn't really want to use the Ouija board. They believed that it was real. I did not. So we decided to go to Target, because we heard that they actually sold them there. I don't know if that's still the case, but in 2009 that was. And so my best friend Diego, and I went to Target, and we had discussed getting it, the Ouija board, before in the car, but as soon as we entered Target, we hadn't said anything about anything. We hadn't even, I think, talked about it. We just kind of beelined it to the game section. Anyway, we got there, towards the back of the store, and hadn't said anything. We were just kind of perusing the aisle with our eyes, not talking to each other. I think we kind of, you know, slightly split up within, you know, 10 or 15 feet of each other, but kind of like reconnaissance of the game section. And I don't know who spotted it first, if it was he or I, but someone behind us, a voice in a Caribbean accent, or something of that nature, Haitian, I don't know, I'm not very good at accents, but certainly something of that, and it sounds insane to think about now, even just to talk about it, because it doesn't seem real, but it very much was. In fact, before I called, I actually called my friend and said, hey, did you remember it like this? And he confirmed it. It's just strange. Anyway, a Caribbean voice came behind us as we were looking, and we turned around, and it was an African-American woman, and she asked us if we were looking for a Ouija board. And just kind of talking about how it's so freaky to think about. And we kind of looked at each other, Diego and I, who's my friend Diego, and we didn't really know what to say, and we said, yes. And she said, oh, I don't think you should be messing with those, or something to that effect. And we kind of looked at each other and nodded and walked down the aisle, like kind of got out of there, because first of all, it was startling that anyone was talking to us, and second of all, after a moment or so, it kind of dawned on us that we hadn't been talking, and in a cliche way or not, the voodoo, the hoodoo culture that is somewhat sometimes associated with Ouija boards and the spirit world, a woman of kind of a really cliche description was behind us, warning us or steering us away from that out of nowhere. I mean, at the time we're in Southern California. It's not like it's necessarily a very, you know, it's not New York City where you feel like there's people coming from the Caribbean often because it's off the coast. I mean, it very well could have been a Caribbean woman there, but why was she there? And we hadn't talked at all about getting a Ouija board while we were in the store. And we were walking down the aisle, and when we turned back around, she was not there. We had been maybe walking for 5 seconds. So I'm not saying that she could have, you know, ducked behind another aisle or whatever. I mean, she could have actually been there in the flesh. I'm just saying it seems extremely strange and too coincidental that all of those events transpired. Especially considering that since then, and like I said, this is back in 2009, since then I've had at least two or three different conversations with sort of peripheral friends, you know, a buddy's girlfriend, and a couple other people who have had extremely real experiences with Ouija boards, and not so much the, you know, playing with the board itself, but sort of the aftermath of messing with it. I certainly thought it was a lot of, you know, hokum before. Things have changed, and I certainly would not be messing with Ouija board now, and would warn most people against it if they're not trying to mess with the spirit world. Anyway, that's my story. Super strange. I haven't really had anything quite like that before or since, but I definitely thought it was worth sharing. So keep up the good work, Derek. You're doing a great job with this podcast, and I can't wait to hear everyone else's stories and kind of piece together this mysterious world. Have a good day. Bye.
Thank you, Danny, for taking the time to submit. This is a strange call indeed, but I can't help but feel it would be much more benign if the woman that warned you had not had the accent. It could be as simple as the woman zigged and you zagged, and because of that Caribbean accent, which we associate with zombies, witchcraft, and the mysterious, you found strangeness in an otherwise normal situation. But then again, as I always say, there could be much more to this story. thank you again for sharing it with us. Our final call of the evening takes us on a wild ride. But before you buy the ticket, let me make a quick explanation. Our next caller will refer to a creature known as a skinwalker in her call. For those unfamiliar, a skinwalker is a Navajo legend in which a trained shaman can alter his appearance and by many accounts turn himself into another animal or even creature. Oftentimes, these creatures are reported to be pale and gaunt in appearance and are associated with murder. Now, armed with that information, the following is Caitlin's submission from Illinois.
Hey there, my name's Caitlin. I have spent the last couple months listening to your podcast, listening through all the episodes, because it's great. I love listening to it. And also because I wanted to try and see if anyone had had a similar experience before I submitted my story. I had seen the success that people kind of had with sharing stories that other people experienced, mainly with the example of the mirrored men, with all the people that experienced that phenomena. And I'm sure it was really, really comforting to find other people that experience something similar. So I was hoping to do that myself, and at the very least share a strange thing that happened. So when this encounter that I had happened, it would have been somewhere between probably 2009 and 2010. I was in high school at the time. I was living in central Illinois in a small town kind of right up against the border with Indiana, and a friend of mine lived a few miles north in an even smaller town, an even more rural area. In the summers I would stay with her for a few days at a time, and we would a lot of times at night go walking if the weather was nice, just for something to do. But we were also into paranormal things and that kind of stuff. And sometimes on these walks, we would, you know, just try and creep each other out, stuff like that. The route that we were taking this one night in particular was going to take us from her house down a back road that went through a park in an open space area. And if you continued to follow this little trail off the road, it would take you through the town cemetery, back onto another side road that eventually connected with the main street of town and back to her house, because she lived on the main street. This night was pretty clear, if I remember it right. And the reason why we had such good visibility is because the moon was either full or almost full. A little bit of cloud cover, but not a whole lot. Wasn't too long after the sun had set that we were out. Just kind of long enough to have the sun go down, and it started to get fairly dark. But even as it started to get darker, the moon came out, so we still had pretty good visibility. So if I remember right, this night we weren't specifically trying to creep each other out or freak each other out or anything. We were mostly just kind of walking and talking about like high school stuff and boys and friends and that kind of stuff. Nothing super specific or important. We had made it, we'd almost completely finished the walk, so we're down the side road through the park, through the open space, and we were probably halfway across the width of the cemetery, walking down the main gravel road. And she stopped and I stopped. And she turned to me and she said, like, dude, did you hear that? And I said, no, but I saw it. And what I saw, running through, kind of weaving in and out of the headstones, what I saw for a couple seconds was what appeared to be a pale, malnourished, completely hairless humanoid, maybe male humanoid figure. It was running on all fours, like its hands and its feet, not its hands and its knees. And it was moving actually pretty quickly. I saw it. She didn't. She just heard it. And it freaked us out pretty bad. So we just kind of froze because we continued to kind of hear it moving around us in a pretty wide circle. but never saw it again. So we called a friend who lived in town, not too far away, because it was a pretty small town, really small town. So we called a friend because we were so freaked out and had him come and meet us and walk us the rest of the way home. And we talked about it a little bit after that, not a whole lot, but it bothered me that I couldn't figure out what it was or pin down what it was. I know one of the first things that everybody always asked me when I told them about it, especially because the area that we were in was, you know, was it a coyote? And it definitely wasn't a coyote. Growing up in that area, I had seen a bunch of coyotes, and I, you know, she did live in a smaller town, you know, surrounded by fields and trees and stuff like that. And I definitely seen coyotes in the area before, but this isn't what that was. And other people, you know, asked maybe it was someone's dog that was a stray, but it wasn't that. It didn't look like any dog of any kind. It looked absolutely 100% human. So I spent a while in the months following that, trying to just research the area and figure out if maybe there was an urban legend or something that I hadn't heard of, or some sort of myth or Native American legend from the area that I'd never heard of. Never really turned anything up, but I did end up connecting with a guy who was a couple towns over who had a paranormal group. I think at the time it was called CHIPS, which was short for Champaign, Illinois Paranormal Society. So he met up with me and my friend and conducted a bit of an interview, and pretty much just went to the cemetery with us where we had had the sighting, did like a voice recording of us describing what it was and him, you know, asking different questions about you know, was it clear that night? Do you think it could have been this? Do you think it could have been that? Anything else unusual? Blah, blah, blah. So gave him that information, and that was kind of the last that I worried about it, because I never could figure out what it was. I never could explain it, but it was literally just that one sighting and nothing more after that. So kind of just, you know, put in the back of my mind as one of those weird sightings that I had, and that was it. Fast forward to 2012. I moved out to Colorado, where I am now, to go to school, and I met a guy out here, and through the course of us talking and stuff, we become really, really good friends. But some of the first things that kind of came up as we were talking and hanging out in the beginning was that we were both fairly interested in paranormal stuff and supernatural stuff. He had an especially keen interest in Native American legends, especially Apache legends, because on one side of his family, he is Apache. So he was interested in things like skinwalkers. And so he's kind of, I hadn't really heard much about skinwalkers until I met him, and then he kind of gave me the full down low from his perspective, and kind of from the Apache perspective. So skinwalkers came up, and that led me to bring up the encounter that I had in the cemetery, you know, a few years back, because the only thing I had ever ran into online that could have possibly explained it was a skinwalker. So I described to him what I saw, and he was a little bit shaken, and he was like, that wasn't a skinwalker, which, I mean, I guess seemed like a good thing, but I couldn't figure out why he seemed so shaken up. And I, you know, told him to kind of elaborate, and he said he had seen that same thing before too, only one time. Described it the same way, as pale, skinny humanoid, potentially male figure, no hair whatsoever, running on hands and feet. And he had seen it in high school or sometime around then, which would have been close to the same time that I saw it. And he said that he thought he knew what it was and where it came from. He had a friend in high school whose sister saw the thing. I think, if I remember right, she saw it one night under her porch, and that it scared her and freaked her out pretty bad. So she went to her mother, who I've been told by my friend is either a psychic or a sensitive or an empath of some sort. and she tried to figure out what it was. And all she could figure out about it was supposedly it had told her that it was very old and her daughter had woken it up, and that was it. So that's the only, I guess, concrete information I could ever get about it. After he and I talked about it, and we started talking about it a lot for a few months, because we were both just blown away that the other person had seen the same thing around the same time, but thousands of miles apart. Because I, you know, at the time I was in Illinois, he was out here in Colorado when this thing supposedly woke up. And it made us kind of start to wonder about this, you know, really big coincidence. And so we started talking more about what we maybe thought it was and speculating. And it was like the more we talked about it, the more it felt like it was aware that we were talking about it, whatever it was. Because mind you, neither one of us had ever seen it. We'd only ever seen it once, never physically saw it ever again. But when we started talking about it a lot, suddenly both of us started having these long bouts of night terrors. And it would essentially be some sort of night terror that involved whatever the thing was. And it would also involve our biggest fear. You know, it wasn't necessarily the thing that was terrifying, but in the night terrors, it might be, for him, it would describe to him his loved ones dying and how he couldn't do anything to save them. And for me, it, you know, would make threats about the things that it could do and that sort of thing. And it also seemed to bring kind of minor bad luck whenever it would pop up in our dreams. And so for a while, we quit talking about it. We sort of both agreed we were going to try and keep it at bay and not talk about it and kind of protect ourselves in whatever spiritual way we could. And it kind of fizzled out. And that was it. I haven't really had any night terrors about it since. He has had a couple here or there at times when he's extremely stressed. We both suffer from pretty severe depression, so we're both kind of closer because of that. And it's definitely something that has affected his depression a little bit and seems to pop up in these stressful times. So that's kind of the gist of it. This weird pale humanoid figure, all of us that have seen it have only seen it once physically manifest, and then after that it only sort of pops up in dreams, and sometimes talking about it too much brings bad luck. Supposedly it's something old that was woken up, and that's all we really know. That's all the information we really have. Some other people we've talked to about it have compared it to the creepypasta creature, the Rake. My friend and I don't put any stock in that at all. We don't believe that's what this is. The Rake is a story that someone on the internet made up. It just happens to bear kind of a resemblance to it, but that's about it. And as far as I know, when he and I saw this thing, it was long before people wrote about the Rake. I could be wrong, though. I honestly haven't really researched the Rake because it doesn't really interest me. But I wanted to tell the story in hopes that maybe someone else saw this thing and could give us more information, or at the very least to give you a strange story. That's about it. So thanks for listening, and good job on the podcast. I know I will continue to be a listener. So have a good one.
Thank you, Caitlin, for submitting your story. You are not alone in your search for closure and for explanation. I can't help but think that a near majority of callers on the show are in search of the very same thing. Perhaps with a little luck, someone out there listening has had a similar experience and can shed some light on your mysterious encounter. I would like to take a quick moment to commend you on contacting a paranormal research group. Oftentimes, it seems these hardworking folks seldom have a black and white answer, but at the very least, your story was submitted, recorded, and compared against many others. A process that hopefully one day will shed some light on the mysterious world that we live in. Thank you again for sharing with us. And that's going to do it for this episode of Monsters Among Us, but before I go, some further info. Before I get into this week's announcements, I want to take a quick moment to mention a fundraiser for Children's Cancer. Warren Pon Abbott, whom you may know as the very talented voice actor for the show, is highly involved in raising money through the St. Baldrick's Foundation for Children's Cancer Research. If you have a couple extra bucks and want to support him and his fellow fundraisers, there is a link in the show notes of tonight's episode, as well as a Facebook post directing you to the site. Literally any amount helps them reach their goal, and it goes without saying that every penny raised helps fight children's cancer. A few days ago, I made a post on Instagram and Facebook asking listeners to share what they would like to hear more of on the show. I received many wonderful suggestions, ranging from more coverage on sea monsters and Dogman to better transitions and longer shows. I appreciate each and every suggestion received, and I will do my best to implement every one that I can. If you have an idea on how to improve the show, feel free to shoot me a message on Facebook or send me an email at monstersamonguspodcast.com. Also, while I'm at it, if you're sitting on a sea monster or Dogman story, make some people happy and call that in today. Speaking of calling in, if you have a story you'd like to share, simply call the 24-hour monster hotline at 1-888-608-NIGHT. That's 1-888-608-6444. Or you can submit 100% anonymously by going to the website at monstersamonguspodcast.com and click on the Report Your Sightings tab. Rating and reviewing on iTunes has really taken off as of late, and I appreciate each and every one of you that has taken the time to submit. If you're listening and you enjoy what you hear, please take a couple extra minutes and leave a rate and review. Each review goes a long way to spread the word about the show, and in turn, brings in more calls. And I don't have to tell you why that's a good thing. It's also been recently brought to my attention that you can leave more than one review. So if you really like the show, go ahead and leave another one. I won't tell anyone. And speaking of spreading the word, be sure to follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And while you're at it, share a story or two with your friends, and be sure to say hello. Remember that I'll be at CryptidCon on Sunday, September 9th in Frankfort, Kentucky. In addition, I'll be roaming the streets of Point Pleasant, West Virginia, a week later for the Mothman Festival. I won't have a booth in either event, but I will be roaming the streets and halls, so if you see me, be sure to say hello. I recently learned I have a new fan, so I went to give a quick shout-out to 9-year-old Emma from Naples, Florida. Thank you for tuning in, Emma. And finally, music from tonight's episode was provided by Mayu and Nature World 1986. Thank you all for listening, and until next week.